I can't explain it. But it's all starting to come together. Good things are starting to happen to the Unplugged Army. And little by little, this thing is going to work. We will be a force to be reckoned with in Phoenix, Arizona. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whatever it is that you've decided to make Doug Franz Unplugged a part of your day, my family greatly appreciates it. My name is Doug Franz, and you have found the only podcast in the world completely devoted to the coverage of the four major sports franchises of one great American city that drops on your phone every single day. Plus coverage of the Rattlers, Rising, Mercury, ASU, U of A, and GCU. I realized I wasn't saying daily every day, because that's what makes this special. We are the only ones that are trying to do it every day. There's cities that have a podcast that covers everybody, but nobody that does it every single day. And, well, I mean, weekday. Man, thought I was on to that one and went up in flames. Hi, how was your Thursday, or how was your Wednesday as we lead into Thursday? You'd think I'd get this right. 2:52 in the morning, though, so I'm a little late in trying to get everything done today. Just kind of dragged. I'm motivated now, but I hate to admit it to you. I was upstairs frustrated with the Diamondbacks and just kind of like, you know, I could just sit in this chair or I could just go to bed and just not do anything. Just be normal for a night. That's what I was thinking. But, you know, I kind of got uplifted. I have a friend of mine returned a text and we're going to play golf next week. And he is somebody, I'll just tell you, I won't tell you specifically who, because that would be rude to him. I never like to tell you. I have a relationship where I feel comfortable telling you, but I don't want to do that to them. I feel it's unprofessional to them because there's plenty of people that advertising on a podcast might not be a great idea. And so I don't want to out people in any way. But he's a restaurant owner in the area, and I think that he can do us some good things. So I'm playing golf with him next week. And then I was jacked up that I got a text back from Jeff Van Raphorst and the former Rose Bowl winning quarterback for Arizona State. We'll talk to him next week, and I'll try to, you know, bother him a lot. I'd like to have him on quite a bit to talk ASU football. And maybe we'll have our first installment with Norman Lott and have him on as well, because Burrito Express had a big event last week and Lott was out there, and I was really impressed with him. So I'd like to have him on, you know, weekly to talk ASU football. So I'm excited about that. And I had a really good show yesterday with Props Arizona. It drops today, but Props Arizona, presented by Betfred Sports, is recorded every Wednesday. That's the podcast that's basically keeping me afloat, but we are starting to build the Unplugged Army for Unplugged. So both things are starting to go well. And just to kind of let you in on things, there might be some more news in the future. Yeah, pretty excited. Might be more things added to the plate, but I'm just so happy with the Unplugged Army and so happy with your support that I think I can stretch this out a little bit and do a little bit more, but I need you. And thanks for all that you've done so far. But I'm pretty excited of where things might be going.
Doug's big one.
Torrey, is the young man an ace or is he not? Is the young man an ace or not? That's the question. Last night really bothered me with the Arizona Diamondbacks. I realize there's nothing even less important in baseball than Diamondbacks at Royals right now. If you'd like me to check the standings, the Diamondbacks come into that game with a 56-66 record, and it's now dropped to 56-67, and the Royals are at 51 now and 75. Okay, I realize where this ranks in the meteors of the world, but whenever something happens that I see as a problem for us going forward, that becomes my big opinion of the day. And Torrey, you had Zach Allen on the mound, 6 innings pitched, 0 earned runs. I know he was at 95 pitches, but is the young man an ace or is he not an ace? If he's an ace, let's let him go back out there. Let's see what he can do in the seventh inning. He's going up against a 214 hitter, a 236 hitter, and a 237 hitter to lead off the seventh inning. Listen, if he's Mad Bum who's pitched terrible this year, hey, get him out after six. Thank goodness he went that long. If it's Tommy Henry, a rookie, you want him to feel good about himself, fine. Take him out. And I know that Noe Ramirez and Joe Mantiply are reliable relievers. I'm not sitting here dogging you out because you lost the game by putting those two in. And I know some of you might feel that way. But I don't feel that way that because he put Noe Ramirez and Mantiply in, they lost. I mean, obviously, that's exactly what happened. So that was the decision that cost them the game, yes. But when you're a manager in that situation, you don't know that two guys that have been horses for you all year are going to completely fall on their face and give up a five spot to a team in a massive youth movement. I get it. But that's not necessarily what's driving me crazy. Because if it's the exact same situation with Tommy Henry or Mad Bum or another pitcher, maybe other than Merrill Kelly, I'm going to say, get him out. And then I would have to eat it too that he put in those two relievers. I'm just talking specifically about Zach Allen. Zach Allen is on fire, and he just got made he had him out 1-2-3 in the sixth inning. So you're out 1-2-3 in the sixth, and now you've got below 230 hitters coming up in the seventh, and you've got your ace on the mound. I don't care that he's at 95 pitches. That's what an ace does. That was a mistake of theory, of philosophy, not just a move in that moment, in a spur of the moment type of, hey, there's pressure right here. You might make a mistake when you've got limited time to think about. No. When are we going to allow this young man to grow and say, hey, you're the guy. I know you're at 95 pitches. See what you can do. Somebody gets on base, you're done. Even if you get a strikeout and it's a 9-pitch strikeout, you're done. But we're gonna have you take a shot at this. We're gonna see what you can do. Man, that got me. That really got me. And here's the other reason why it really bothered me, is because they went with Ramirez first. So if you're going with Ramirez first, you're still going righty on left, because Isbell is a right-handed hitter. Is a left-handed hitter. So it's not like you put in your guy in Ramirez to go up against him. If you were to put in Mantiply, at least you're going left on left. You put in Isbell first. I just think that was wrong. My big one is Torrey Lovello. If Merrill Kelly's on the mound or Zach Allen's on the mound, make them give you a reason to take them out. I believe that loss was on you, Torrey. That was a mistake. Sound credits coming up for the 4-minute offense and the rest of the show. I got everything Buda Baker, AJ Green, and Cliff Kingsbury all from azcardinals.com, as they have video up of the pressers that took place after the joint practices with the Tennessee Titans. And I got the Torrey Lovello that I'm going to use from Bally Sports Arizona following. Yeah.
4-minute offense. 4-minute offense.
4 minutes.
4-minute offense. 4-minute offense.
Everything you need to know in sports that affects Maricopa County, the state of Arizona, and the world, you get in 4 minutes. We start things off in Kansas City, Missouri. The Diamondbacks bullpen blows it again. After a Dalton Varsho fifth-inning solo shot, the Diamondbacks held a 1-0 lead as Zach Gallen also did it again. Six innings pitched, no earned runs. His streak now stands at 27 1/3 straight scoreless innings. Manager Torrey Lovello.
We're budgeting to win this game 1-0. We're going to turn it over to the bullpen and shorten the game that way. It didn't work out.
The Royals, who are going through one of the most massive youth movements in baseball, came roaring back with 5 runs in the seventh inning against usually reliable Noe Ramirez and all-star Joe Mantiply. Diamondbacks are off today. They take on the White Sox in a 3-game series starting Friday in Chicago. News before the game was Mad Bum will not be pitching in the White Sox series, and it is performance related. Torrey Lovello said they're going to skip Madison Bumgarner's spot in the rotation so he can work longer with pitching coach Brett Strom. By all reports, the Arizona Cardinals joint practice against the Titans was a smashing success. success. Safety Buda Baker.
Yeah, it was very competitive today. Had a lot of juice, had a lot of fun. You know, guys were ready early. This is my first joint practice in my career, so I was hyped up myself. So it was definitely, we had a good time. Defense had a great time today.
You also knew it went great for the Cardinals because all of the comments from the Titans were frustration with their inability to convert in the red zone. Starting lineups in for each team's Ryan Tannehill at quarterback. Arizona Cardinals playing red zone defense.
We were in a situation with 13 seconds left, no timeouts. They tried to get in the end zone. And of course, Murph picked that off. So, you know, it was definitely special today. Definitely a great day for the team.
Murph is Eastside's own Byron Murphy Jr., who had an interception when it's ones versus ones in the team period of red zone defense, intercepting Ryan Tannehill to quote-unquote save the team. Sadly, he's one of the few healthy cornerbacks for the Arizona Cardinals. Coach Cliff Kingsbury, what's wrong with cornerback Antonio Hamilton?
We'll let you know week one when we have to.
The talk of camp, the DeAndre Hopkins catch, which is making all the rounds on social media. Back shoulder throw that ends up as a one-handed pirouette catch. Today, the Cardinals are taking what's called a mental day in the middle of training camp. They'll have walkthrough tomorrow. They take on the Titans in Nashville on Saturday to wrap up the preseason before they take on the Chiefs week one, September 11th. May we never forget. An old friend is coming a little closer to home. The Los Angeles Lakers have traded Talon Horton Tucker to the Utah Jazz for Chris Paul irritant Patrick Beverley. Even though that means the Suns will have to play against Beverley a lot more, it's also interesting because of the very fiery relationship between Russell Westbrook and Patrick Beverley. This could be a sign Russell Westbrook won't be on the Lakers much longer. I think Coyotes fans will get over the loss, but Phil Kessel has a job, and it's not with Arizona. He signed a one-year, $1.5 million contract with Vegas. No word if he'll show up in great shape for them. And finally, it's all about timing. The city of Newark, New Jersey, was going to send out a request for proposals to have different companies give quotes on assessing the potential for leaks and ruptures along a 28-mile water main of large transmission and the supporting water system. The request was scheduled to go out to companies on September 1st. Too late, as yesterday, thousands of homes were totally without water and others were at a reduced capacity. In the most extreme cases, it wasn't until the end of the day that a family could flush the toilet.
602-899-7000 is the phone number for Ideal Home Loans. If you see an investment property that's a golden opportunity and you want to jump on it, don't be intimidated by the interest rates if you choose Ideal Home Loans. Yes, interest rates are obnoxious right now, but once you close your loan, after 6 months have passed, Ideal Home Loans starts monitoring all loans and all interest rates. And if interest rates drop a half a percentage point, they will then contact you and say, we'd like to set you up with a new mortgage and we're going to waive all lender fees. And therefore, you save money, but you're not sitting around trying to monitor when is the best time to refinance. So it's not just sign this document and then go away. They continually work for you to say, how can we help you save money? So whether it's an investment property to rent, a home to buy for your family, or an opportunity to refinance to get out of credit card debt, call 602-899-7000. First they listen, then they lend. Or go to idealhomeloans.com. All right, Cardinals fans, you've been waiting for it for a while. You get it today. An overwhelmingly positive Doug Franz unplugged about the Arizona Cardinals. No, I was not in Nashville. I'm still here in my wife's office. Right now it's 3:03 in the morning. Okay. I did not go to practice yesterday. But it is absurd how positive the comments are that came out of everything to do with practice. And it's not very often you would get like total honesty. So I realize if they were terrible, I don't know how honest they would be about a terrible practice. But here's where I also back it up. Everything I read and heard from the Titan side of things was how frustrated they were with the way they looked. Well, of course, if you get whipped, you're going to be frustrated with the way you look. No one's going to say, boy, we look great, we beat them. And the other side is saying, we look great, we beat them. So the Titans weren't happy and the Cardinals are. That lets you know the Cardinals did very well and dominated a football team that has high expectations this year. Cliff Kingsbury was asked if he got everything out of the Titans joint practice that he was hoping for.
Definitely. I thought lots of good energy. You felt the competitive fire from our guys. I thought they really turned up in the competition. And to go against another team and different people in one-on-ones was really good for them. And we'll watch the film. A lot to clean up, but I really liked the energy and I liked the way that they competed.
That's a really good thing when you say you had energy, you competed, and then you couple that with what the rookie tight end McBride said about the rules of engagement.
Very similar to a regular practice, but they did stress. They didn't want us to no fighting. That was very, that was stress. That was something that they wanted to make clear that, you know, with the few competitive periods we had with the Titans today, they wanted to stress that we had no fighting. It was just good competition, just wanted to go and play football and be safe, you know, have a good, you know, competitive football and not, you know, get into the fighting and things because that's where things get out of hand.
Also, there were a ton of fights in Titans versus Patriots. So I think that had a little bit to do with why there was a little bit of hesitation on the part of Cliff to really go at it. But, hey, I'm not going to recant until, you know, they win a playoff game under Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. But I have been very down all preseason that they would be able to compete. And they did great. Now, maybe the Titans are exhausted from the week against the Patriots. Maybe the Titans really aren't all that good. You know, maybe there's areas where you can take credit away from Arizona, but it doesn't look like it. It looks like they deserve a great amount of credit for the way that they attacked practice yesterday. Cliff was asked if he was happy with the red zone period because that was really the main time they went 11 on 11 and I don't know why I just realized that. Isn't that weird? I'm a soccer coach. Was. And in soccer, we say 11v11 or 3v3 or 5v5. You always say versus, but you say V. And yet in basketball, you always say, hey, you want to play 3-on-3? Hey, it's 2-on-2, 2-on-2. You know, and you always say on. And you do the same thing in football. I don't know why I found that interesting. That was not nearly as interesting as my mind thought it was when I started talking about it. All right. Anyway, so Cliff Kingsbury goes 11 on 11 and for red zone at the end of practice. And by all accounts, the Cardinals dominated the red zone drills. Cliff, were you happy?
Yeah, I did. We got what we wanted out of it. Had some tough penalties called, which we got to get cleaned up, and we understand that. But I think just the operation to have a real NFL officiating crew and work it against another team was good for us.
So imagine the hype then about doing 11 on 11 and having this be the real – this is the only test of the preseason. You know, good on good, ones on ones. Now, granted, you could say, well, wait, they do it all the time in practice. Yes, they do. I'm not denying that. But it's totally different when you're going up against another team that doesn't see your schemes all the time. When you look at the defense of the Arizona Cardinals, Ryan Tannehill's out there. Who knows how Ryan Tannehill's going to play this year? He could be damaged goods after the way he fell apart in the second round of the playoffs. First game for them, but second round of the playoffs against the Bengals. And now in this one-on-one, or I should say ones-on-ones, give the credit to Byron Murphy, right, Buddha?
Yeah, definitely. It was a great sequence. Both 2-minute drills that we did do, it was great. We were in a situation with 13 seconds left, no timeouts. They tried to get in the end zone, and of course, Murph picked that off. So, you know, it was definitely special today. Definitely a great day for the team.
Got a lot of Buddha Baker for you from azcardinals.com as well. I love Buddha. You know, when we get on Steve Keim, there's a lot of good reasons to get on Steve Keim. But also be fair. And he crushed that draft pick. He crushed the Buddha Baker draft pick. And just by an example, listen to this. Buddha was asked what was his favorite part of practice. Does he prefer the one-on-ones? So that means you're going up against a drill and him as a safety. He might have had a receiver over the top, might have had a tight end. You know, who knows what he's doing? But is it the one-on-ones? Is it when they go 7-on-7? Or is it more of the team drill at the end and the red zone? What? Where really is the most benefit for you? What do you like the most?
Honestly, it's just about competing for me, for the team as well. I feel like that compete factor of another, you know, going against your same teammates week in and week out, you know, that kind of gets boring. It's fun to go against, you know, a new type of group, and especially with a lot of the ones not playing in the preseason, this joint practice has helped a lot with us, you know, covering different guys. You know, my favorite was everything, 1-on-1, 7-on, and 2-minute, because, you know, that we'll get in situations like that in the game. So it's definitely was a great day today.
My favorite was all of it. I mean, this is one of those things where this is so much bigger than the game. Do you have Buda Bakers in your office? Are you a Buda Baker in your office? Are you a Buda on the job site? What's your favorite part of work? I love all of it. I mean, are you ready to say that? I got to admit to you, I was not Buddha at work when I was at the old show. I started to get sour near the end. It might have been part of my demise. I'm so passionate and have so many creative ideas and such a strong desire to push us forward. And I kept feeling like we were backward. We were going backward. And instead of being patient and doing a better job, you know, explaining my point of view or just being nicer about it, I would get angrier and angrier about it. And if you're in that boat that I was, I'm not saying you're wrong. Your passion is beautiful. Your ideas can help the company. And I can't imagine how frustrating it is if the company's not listening to you. But number one, learn how to speak your mind differently. Learn how to speak your mind better with more passion in the explanation and less anger in it. And if you're still feeling that way, start coming to sanctioned events with business cards. Introduce yourself to people. Send me a tweet so I can send it out to the Unplugged Army that you're looking around, you know, and say, hey, I'm not being utilized as well as I can. There might be somebody in the Unplugged Army that can use you, but be more Buddha. I just love that. What do you like about, I liked everything. That's Buddha. I already told you about a good trade by Steve Keim when he traded up to get Buddha Baker. I'm not saying that Cody Ford is going to be an all-pro guard or anything, but the newest news of what's going on at guard, I mean, there's people laying all over the place. They're not getting healthy. This is going to turn out to be a fantastic trade just to get them through the season at the guard spot, let alone if Cody Ford becomes the answer to the future. If Justin Pugh does retire at the end of the season, here is Cliff Kingsbury on Ford, because he already showed up and was practicing with the ones against the Titans.
Yeah, big, nasty, obviously has played at a high level, you know, whether it was college or when he had a chance in Buffalo. And so we're excited to be able to come out here and pick enough up to go in there. It was pretty impressive. And we just got to keep spoon feeding him the offense and get him ready for week one.
I want you to hear this quote from Buddha. It's really interesting to me the way he puts this on himself. I think that there is such a massive weakness at the cornerback position that it's going to derail the whole season. That and the combination of a lack of pass rush. Some people are telling me they're going to be fine in the pass rush department. I'll believe it when I see it. But that's such a deadly combination for the defense. The quarterback will have time to throw because you can't rush him, and your corners can't cover to give the pass rushers time to get a sack. You talk about a symbiotic relationship that has to be successful in the NFL, and I don't see it at all for the Cardinals. Couple that with the struggles of Zaven Collins as your middle linebacker, okay? I mean, you can be great on the back end with Buddha. You can be great in a three technique with whoever you're going to be playing in that position. Hopefully Lawrence really gets it down, or whatever you're going to do with JJ. Hopefully you can get Marcus Golden back in the fold. But for the most part, I don't think this team can cover anybody. And listen to Buddha put it on himself to help the young guys.
For me and JT is just to get the communication out as early as possible, especially with, you know, guys that, you know, are relatively new. You know, you got Marco in his second year. As long as we can communicate to them the call beforehand and they can just lock in. And, you know, after that, you know, God-given gifts that they do will make whoever win the position. So just for us is to get that communication out as early as possible and to let the corners play.
Wow, is that leadership? Because think about that. The reverse of that is when the corners get beat deep, it's because the play call didn't get to them soon enough to where they could relax, know their responsibilities, and stay focused. I don't believe that, do you? But that's what makes Buddha a great leader. I know you guys can do it. I'm going to take it upon myself to make sure you get the call sooner so you can get yourself lined up and just focus on here's my job. Here's what I'm thinking about on this play. And then let your talents take over. And almost like he's saying, it's my fault if you get beat. It's the only way to go with these guys, but it's still impressive. This is tough to hear. It was yesterday before they left. Yesterday's unplugged, but it was Tuesday's practice where before they flew out to Tennessee, Cliff Kingsbury was asked about not having Antonio Hamilton out in the out of practice. And he said he just had a doctor's appointment. And it was funny, everybody in the media, nobody asked what for. And on the one hand, okay, admittedly, it's never any of our business when any employee on planet Earth has a doctor's appointment. But in the world of football, you normally, as an individual, schedule doctor appointments around that, unless it's a football injury. You've got doctors all over the place. You don't say, yeah, I've been struggling with this bad cold, so I'll go see the doctor. Yeah. You know, that just doesn't happen. But nobody jumped on it and asked why. So finally in Tennessee, when Hamilton wasn't there, and he's a cornerback that probably to this point had beaten out Marco Wilson and or Josh Jackson, if Josh Jackson even makes the team. It looked like Hamilton had won the corner, the other starting cornerback job. And now he doesn't have it, I guess. So, coach, what's going on with him?
We'll let you know week one when we have to.
Now, I didn't play it for you, but earlier in the press conference, he said he wasn't terribly worried about the situation with Hamilton. Well, then why hide it? If you're not worried, why hide it? Because if you're not worried, that means he's going to be fine in the 2 weeks it takes to get to September 11th. So if you're not worried, let's go. But if you want to hide it, that tells me that it's a little bigger and that's an issue. So I'm worried. I admit it. They've got issues all over the place at corner right now. Positively, not only was the practice positive, listen to Buddha Baker just kind of gush on the star linebacker position. That's the name that they have tagged Isaiah Simmons because they plan on letting the linebacker slash safety slash corner slash whatever, just allowing the slash to go wherever he needs to go on a specific play.
That star role, he's a star, you know, he can play whatever position. That's going to do great for us. It's, you know, offenses are going to be, it's going to be kind of hard to game plan against us because so many guys do so many different things. So, I'm so excited for Isaiah, you know, a guy who's now in the DB group that we see every day and meet every day with and talk to. So it's definitely special to have a guy like that who can do so many different things. And being a 6'3", 230-something run that runs a 4'3", you know, there's not many of those. So, you know, I'm just very excited for him, and I can't wait to for everyone to see what he's going to do this year.
I judge players by how quickly they kind of change the subject. if you ask a player about a guy who's not doing well or is not liked or is kind of average, you'll normally go, oh yeah, he's working hard. He's, you know, we're all impressed with his work ethic. All the young guys are doing this. Young guys are this, the young guys are that. And then you immediately kind of go into either a cliche or you change the subject to talk about the group and no longer the individual. And when you are impressed with an individual or he has earned your respect, a player will stay on that topic when you ask him about somebody. So you notice Buddha's asked about Isaiah Simmons and he doesn't start talking about other linebackers or he doesn't move off of it. Or he doesn't say something like, you know, if he could just figure this out, you know, then if you say that, that's a huge deal and you're just trying to act like it's one small thing. That was all gushing right there from Buddha. That was all hype for the way he believes in Isaiah Simmons. I thought it was a wonderful draft pick. I wanted Brown out of Auburn that year, but he went to Carolina right ahead of Isaiah Simmons. And I also love Javon Kinlaw. And I would say he's a South Carolina defensive lineman. So far, I'm wrong. So far, Isaiah Simmons has totally outshined Javon Kinlaw mostly because of injuries. But supposedly, Kinlaw for the 49ers is fire right now going into year three. But Isaiah Simmons is winning that charge. And even though his rookie year wasn't great, really picked up a lot more last year. And then everybody's talking about him so far this year. On the offensive side, people continue to talk about Greg Dortch. Here is AJ Green.
Man, Dortch, I tell everybody about Dortch, man. Just like his feel for the game, his hands, his mentality every day is unmatched. Every day, you're going to get 100% out of that guy. He's going to catch things. It don't matter who you put. You put a first round in front of him, we know what's going to happen. Like, he's going to eat him up. That's his mentality each day. So,
again, asked about who impresses him or who he's rooting for. He talks about Greg Dortch, doesn't change the subject, and says, we know what's going to happen. He's going to eat that guy for lunch. I mean, wow. Again, it's all positive. It's all positive today. And no, it's not a positive thinking Thursday, Wolf, if you're listening. It's too many people. There's too many people talking great about what happened yesterday at the joint practice to rain on the parade. And that does make you feel good going into a season that they did rise to the occasion for the only time the ones are actually competing against another team in an entire training camp. Yesterday's the only time. But they won. They won that round. So I want to exude confidence in what they did for practice one. Now, doesn't change my opinion on the first three games. I still think they're going 0-3. And I'm looking at Cliff Kingsbury and I'm looking at Camp Pillow Fight. But they did win yesterday. Here's a pretty good story if you want to hear it. Mike Vrabel's the head coach of the Titans. And he was in New England while Cliff Kingsbury had his brief time as a Patriot. And they asked him about knowing Mike Vrabel. And here's a great story, because you kind of look at Mike Vrabel on the sidelines as just this big brute. And listen to Cliff describe the brain.
I got to New England in 03, so almost 20 years. And he was one of those guys that you could see his knowledge of the game, his charisma, the way he talked to people. He was the one dude in the whole building that could give Coach Belichick, basically. You know, he could.
In 03?
He could still. He'd be the one who'd call him out on stuff. And then when you talked football, it was just on a different level, you know, for a player than I'd been around. So it doesn't surprise me at all the success he's had. Very competitive and has created a great culture here.
Some more good news if you're a Cardinals fan. There's a writer on ESPN.com. I read him, but I'm not really a huge fan of his. There's just been a lot of times he's like graded trades, and I just thought, what are you talking about? I've disagreed with him so often, and sometimes I really like people. Like Keith Law is a writer for baseball for The Athletic. That I think I disagree with him almost all the time, and I love his stuff. He really makes me think. Bill Barnwell does not make me think. So I don't love it. But I still read it because I consider it my job. And he writes two articles every year at ESPN.com. The top five teams that he's predicting to win more games and the top five teams he's predicting that will lose more games than last year. And here's his synopsis of his success in writing the loser column. He says he's been doing it for 5 years. So that's 25 teams he has named in the past. And this is now year six. Who will lose more games this year than they did last year. He says 20 out of 25 he's gotten correct. So out of the 25 predictions he's made, he's basically averaging 80%, 4 out of 5 a year that he's right on. However, here's where it gets even more impressive. 3 teams out of the 5 that he did not get correct simply matched their record from the year before. So if a team's 8-8 and he says they're going to lose more games this year, they go 8-8 again. Well, he's still wrong, but how wrong is he, you know? So he says 3 times that happened, and only twice has he ever labeled you as a team that's going to lose more games this year than last year. And those teams actually won more games than they did previously. So as soon as I saw this article, I thought for sure Cardinals are in it, no doubt. Out of all 32 teams, you're telling me there's 5 teams you believe will lose more games this year than last year, more so than the Cardinals. The answer is yes. Doesn't mean the Cardinals won't lose more games than they did last year, but he believes that these 5 have a much better chance than the Cardinals. Now, one of them's a little cheesy. He's got Green Bay in it. And if you're a Packer fan, I'm sorry, I don't remember your record, but I think they were 13-4. So he's just simply making the prediction. They go, well, they get 11 or 12 wins, still win the NFC North. But they don't have to, you know, worry about a total drop-off and out of the playoffs. His other 4 teams, Atlanta, who he thinks are going to go from bad to terrible, Tennessee, and I'm all over him on that one. I totally agree. They were the 1 seed last year in the AFC. Do you really think that's happening again? I don't. Pittsburgh, kind of an easy one without Big Ben. And one I do disagree with, Las Vegas. He says Las Vegas will lose more games this year than they did last year. I would put Arizona well ahead of Las Vegas. So Bill Barnwell, I don't know if you care what I think, but I'm disagreeing with you so vehemently that there is a lunch bet on the table and I don't even know you and you owe me lunch when I'm right. So thank you. And a small piece of news that kind of affects all of the playoff race. Dallas left tackle Tyron Smith yesterday, tore his hamstring. That's at least a 10-week injury, probably 12 to 14 weeks. So I would say he comes back sometime around Thanksgiving. You lose that strong of a piece for Dak Prescott. That's a big burden to carry. I'm not ready to say Dallas is terrible all of a sudden, but the NFC East is frighteningly weak. So you're fighting it out with Giants, Redskins, football team Commanders, and Eagles for the right to get slaughtered by somebody else. But somebody's got to win that division. And everyone assumes it's Dallas. And I do too. But when you see an injury like that, I don't think Philly's a disaster. I kind of like their coach. But I don't think Philly's the disaster that everybody else does. It's still the NFC East. It's still, you know, you're going to be 9-8 and slip into the playoffs and probably out in the first round. But I'm bringing it up to you if you're a Cardinals fan because I think you really want the East to be a one-bid league. So you want somebody to do well or all 4 to be terrible. But you just got to get them out of your way in the NFC East and make sure you've got a playoff spot. And there might be a battle going on between Dallas and Philly, and the loser is in a battle with the Cardinals to get the other playoff spot. So keep an eye on that injury. That could dramatically change the NFC playoff race. All right, coming up next, the bullpen in your office is better than the one the Diamondbacks have. On Doug Franz Unplugged. I really can't pinpoint why this loss is, to me, one of the most frustrating of the season. Granted, they've had a lot of losses to the Giants this year and some other teams where it's just a total meltdown or terrible baseball. They were really struggling, at the end of April, I think it was, middle of April, when the starting pitching was fantastic for a while. I mean, fantastic. And the Diamondbacks could not hit to save their lives. But this game really bugged me because you've got back-to-back games in Kansas City where the first five innings, you're doing nothing offensively. And, I mean, this Singer kid can pitch. But come on. I mean, somebody step up. And there just wasn't a high level of focus, in my opinion, in this game. In watching some of the at-bats, there wasn't that competitive drag-it-out battles, other than maybe a Josh Rojas, of course. So real frustration to watch this game. If you didn't see it, pitcher's duel, solo homer from Dalton Varsho in the fifth. So Diamondbacks up 1-0. Little bit of trouble for Zach Allen in the fifth. Dominant in the sixth, so he's through six innings and again has not given up a run, extending his streak to 27 innings and a third right now. He is lighting it up, and then the bullpen blows it. Here's Torey Lovello.
We relied on Zach. He did exactly what we thought he would do. We were budgeting to win this game 1-0. We were going to turn it over to the bullpen and shorten the game that way. It didn't work out. You know, maybe a play could have been made here or there. Haven't looked at any of the video, but we didn't execute in some really crucial situations. That's how I'm looking at it right now.
Well, when he says a play could be made here or there, what he's talking about is a play up the middle in the seventh inning and also in the both plays in the seventh inning. Number one is there's a ball hit back up the middle to start off the inning by Isbell. And it's a tough play. I don't like looking at that play and saying that play's got to be made. And the reason why I say it's a tough play is when you line up in the new shifts, as they had the Diamondback shortstop lined up in that same way. So it was Alcantara's turn to be the shortstop in for Perdomo. When you're in that shift, you're kind of behind the pitcher just a little bit. So the ball is hit and hits a very strange landing spot. He lands it on the back of the mound, and it's almost like a rolling bounce. Okay, I don't care how weird that sounds. That's kind of what happened. And by hitting the back of the mound, it put a funny spin on the ball. So you've got Alcantara, who can't really see really well behind the pitcher, with the ball coming almost out of Zach Gallen. Then it takes the funny skip hop off the mound, and he does try to do a little ole move with it. And I'm more of, hey, get squared up and at least let it hit you. But he doesn't get the out there. And then Noe Ramirez butchers the safety squeeze. There's two types of squeeze plays. Runner on third, safety squeeze. He takes a pretty large lead and looks to see if the bunt gets down properly. And as soon as you see the bunt going down and not being popped up in the air, you go full bore home. You don't wait to see where it's hit. You just know it's on the ground. I'm going. And then a suicide squeeze is when you're actually stealing home. But as you're stealing home, your teammate bunts the ball. It's one of the great plays in baseball because it's just crazy. I mean, everybody's running around like nuts while you've got this guy stealing home, and it's so hard to throw him out. Well, on a safety squeeze, it's not as hard to throw him out unless it's a really good bunt. So Noe Ramirez comes flying in and thinks he can get the run at the plate. And they allow the sacrifice to also turn into a fielder's choice without a time at bat, and they put Lopez on first. So if you don't cut the run down, at least get yourself an out. And if he does his job there, there are two outs and only one run is in. And you're in a much better spot. So now you've got the bases empty and you're pitching to a guy that's had one day of service time yesterday in Drew Walters, although he did get his first hit of his career in the second. But that was just kind of a cheesy bouncer, oh, a little lob over Rivera at third. So he's not a threat. One major league hit in his life, bases empty, two outs. And that doesn't happen all because of Ramirez screwing that up. And it's also kind of on Carson Kelly and anybody else in that infield. It's not like Royals fans are so loud you couldn't be heard. You got to be yelling 1-1-1-1-1. And Ramirez butchers that. So you have a play where I want to protect the shortstop and say, listen, that one's really hard. But a mental error by Noe Ramirez that extends the inning. So now you got one runner on. Melendez gets an RBI. You got two runners on, actually. Melendez gets an RBI single, and then boom, three-run homer for Witt. And the game's basically over. It's 5-1. All because of bad pitching and bad execution. That, in my opinion, could have been saved by keeping Zach Gallen in the game. He just went 1-2-3. I don't care that he's at 95 pitches. You know, if somebody gets on, fine, take him out. And then I really don't understand when you bring in a righty when you've got a left-handed batter at the plate. I mean, explain that. I don't understand some of those decisions, Tori. This one, I don't think this was a good game for you. Let's talk about Zach first, and then we'll talk about why you didn't leave him in. So what'd you think of Zach?
He spoils us, right? So it's usually very pristine when he's on a run that he's been on. And when he hits a couple bumps in the road, by his own standards, and our eyes tell us it's not perfect, it still is pretty darn good. He threw the ball really well today. He gave us six unbelievable innings and gave up no runs. He did his job perfectly.
He's talking about the somewhat lack of command at times that got him into trouble, because he had three hits, three walks, especially the walks. But he did strike out six. I'm just looking at it as he's your ace. He got him out 1-2-3 in the sixth inning. He's at 95 pitches. Don't take him out. And oh my gosh, if you are going to take him out, when it goes left, right, left to start the inning, at least put in the lefty then. But why didn't you leave him in? Did you think about it?
We were trying to shorten things, you know. We contemplated it. But our pitch total that we talked about was exceeded in the six. We just didn't want to run him back out there and get him over 100 pitches at this point in time.
We didn't want to get him over 100 pitches at this point in time. That's something deeper right there. That to me is code for, we think Zach is so good and 2022 is dead. I mean, that's really what he's saying there. We didn't want to get him over 100 pitches at this time. To me, that means you've already thrown 2022 away. It's not about what is the best decision to win this game. You're thinking, we're going to try to keep him at or under 100 pitches the rest of the year, because it's a dead year, so why push it? I think this is exactly what you want to know now. You want Zach Gallen learning how to pitch at a higher pitch count. especially against a bad team. To me, this is the perfect learning experience. You had a rough fifth inning, but got out of it. You had a really good sixth inning. You're tired. You're on the road. We need you. Let's see what you can do. If he gets into trouble, boom, you yank him. And what does that do for his confidence if he goes out there in the seventh inning and he annihilates the Royals and now you take him out? Now he's feeling great. Hey, I got 21 outs for this ball club. If there's ever a time to build a player's confidence, it's against the Royals. Tried to say all this in the big one, and I'm still fired up about it. It's been 45 minutes since the big one, and I'm still fired up about this. All right, let's go back to that play in the seventh inning I already talked about that bounced off the back of the mound. What happened, in your opinion, to Alcantara?
Yeah, I think it just caught him with a quick hop. You know, I think maybe moving my knee-jerk reaction is maybe side-saddle it, get a drop step, and create some space in there. It's probably a tough play, but it's one I've seen Sergio make. And, you know, look, once that happens, we've got to collect ourselves and go out and execute. The safety squeeze is a play we talk a lot about. We practice defending it a lot, and sometimes it's executed properly. You got to just collecting out at first base. So, like I said, my knee-jerk reaction is we could have done things a little bit differently to create a totally different environment in that seventh inning.
I'm also going to look at the leadership of Carson Kelly right there. You want your pitcher focused on every pitch, right? But a catcher looking at a situation with less than two outs, bottom of the lineup, and a runner on third, and it's not a force play. That is prime squeeze time. And a catcher should be all over it and tell their pitcher, hey, focus on this batter, but if there's a squeeze, if we can get an out at home, let's do it. But if you're not absolutely sure, then we got to get an out here. And then as soon as that bunt is rolling away from the plate, you take one glance at the runner, you got to make a quick decision, and you need your catcher to be yelling 2-2-2 or 1-1-1, whoever is not fielding the ball. Okay, if you're the one fielding the ball, you focus on the ball and you listen to your teammates. So either somebody was yelling 4-4-4, you never say home, 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 you say 4. Someone's yelling 4-4-4 for absolutely no reason. And Noe Ramirez hustles his throw home and now he's safe. You've given up a run. And most importantly, you've allowed them to have another runner. But if you're yelling 1-1-1 and he still throws it home, now it's like, what in the world are we doing? So I'm putting a lot of that on Carson. It's not an error. It's a mental error by Noe Ramirez. But you're the catcher. And that's why catchers are the only player that's facing all of his teammates in baseball. You're the leader. And you didn't get that one right, Carson. Coming up next, another reason why I'm mad at the Diamondbacks is because I would have had 6-2 versus Vegas is up next on Doug Franz Unplugged. Before I get to versus Vegas, I got to read you this quote. This got me excited. I like this quote. Angelique Kerber. I know nothing about women's tennis, nothing. But Angelique Kerber is a former winner of the U.S. Open and a former number one. She's no longer number one. She has withdrawn from the U.S. Open. Her reasoning is because she says, I eventually decided that 2-1 just isn't fair. She's pregnant. I just think that's so funny. Eventually, I decided 2-1 just isn't fair. That's good. Man, I would have loved to seen a pregnant woman win that. That's exciting. That's exciting. I love that quote, Angelique. Best of luck to you and the family. It's time for... All right, Tampa, All right, Diamondbacks, what are we doing? What are we doing here? I should have been. How many times have you heard that? I should have been 7-1 last night. 7-1. Instead, I'm 4-4. I started off the day 2-0, too, that really, like, it makes you even more upset when that happens. I took Atlanta to easily cover the money line. Whenever JT Brubaker's out there, we can make money. I said, yeah, they'll cover the 2.5 run line. They won 14-2, thank you. And I took San Francisco and Detroit under 7.5. Final was 6-1. I barely escaped on that one, but I got that one right. Blew it on Seattle against Washington. I don't know what happened there. Washington was a winner 3-1, and I had Seattle on the run line. I'm eating that one. That one's on me. My other three losses, what is this trash? I took Toronto on the money line at Boston. I got that one. And I took the Dodgers on the money line against Milwaukee. Of course, I wish I would have done the run line on that one because the Dodgers won 12-6. But the three losses that I'm holding in contempt, Tampa Bay covering the run line against the Angels. They won 4-3 in extras. I think it was 11 innings. It's the Angels. Come on, Rays. Come on. I'm picking you again today. You better not choke like yesterday. So the Rays won, but they didn't cover. And then the Diamondbacks. I took Arizona at Kansas City under 7.5. It not only ends on 8, but the Diamondbacks scored 2 runs in the top of the 9th that do them no good. One on a defensive indifference and back-to-back wild pitches to make it a 7-run game, but I'm still going to win. And then Christian Walker hits his career-high 30th home run, and I mean to deep center field. And now they got 8, 5-3, and I lose. That's a bad beat right there. And I've got Arizona on the money line over Kansas City as well. I got the 1-0 lead and an all-star on the mound. They blow it. So I end up 4-4 on the day. 462 and 397 is the overall record now. 462 and 397. I don't like any of the NFL games tonight to gamble on. So I got all baseball tonight. And I'm standing on the table. I love my picks. I love these picks. We're going 5-1. We're doing it tonight. All right. I got Cleveland at Seattle. I'm taking the under 7.5. Cleveland had to fly up there, and with them flying all the way up, I don't like that. When you've got Seattle just sitting at home waiting for you, and Cleveland's got a great pitcher going, so I like the under 7.5. Seattle's got a terrible pitcher going, so I'm hoping Cleveland's tired. Because it's a day game. It's really strange. Yankees covering the run line over Oakland. That game's easy. That game's easy. Yankees all over the run line against Oakland. Rays are not going to screw it up 2 games in a row. I'm taking them on the run line against the Angels. Little nervous about this one, but I'm going to run with it. White Sox at Orioles on the over for 8.5. Bad pitching matchup. I'm not betting on the White Sox again this year, but this doesn't count when you're taking a total. Philadelphia and the Mets both have to cover hefty run lines of 2.5. I'm going to take them anyway. I think the Reds are throwing a kid in his second start, and Aaron Nola's going for the Phillies, and he's fantastic, even though his record doesn't show it. So I'm going to take Philadelphia minus the 2.5, and Jacob DeGrom's going for the Mets, and the Rockies are the Rockies. So I'm taking the Mets minus 2.5. So 6 games, all favorites, Yankees and Rays minus 1.5, Mets and Phillies minus 2.5 on the run line. And I got White Sox, Baltimore over 8.5, Cleveland, Seattle under 7.5. That does it for today's version of Doug Franz Unplugged. Thanks a lot for listening. Things are starting to come together for me. The show is starting to grow. Things are starting to happen. lot of things behind the scenes going on that might be able to help my family out tremendously, and I have you to thank. So thank you. I'll let you in on more once I know more, because I don't know everything that's going on either. Just a lot of things floating out there all at the same time. Thanks a lot to Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical. 602-2-REPAIR is the phone number if you've got any issues with your air conditioning. Ideal Home Loans monitors the rates like crazy. So even if you've already got a mortgage with Ideal Home Loans, you might be eligible to have a new rate, and they lower all of your lender fees. They don't lower them, they eliminate them. That's pretty cool. That's why you should choose Ideal Home Loan, 602-899-7000. Haven't been to Bell's Nashville Kitchen in about, I don't know, a week and a half, so I'm starting to go through withdrawal. So I got to meet you over at Bell's. And I'm probably going to the ASU game next Thursday. So if you're going to tailgate, that does mean you got to stop by Burrito Express early, though, because remember, they're not open for dinner. Stop in there early. Start your tailgate with Burrito Express. I'll see you tomorrow.